Welcome back to HN Pod, your daily dive into the top stories and discussions from Hacker News. I am Sarah.
And I am Mike. Thanks for joining us for episode number 395. Today, we are looking back at the biggest trends from yesterday, May 13th, 2026. And Sarah, we have a really fascinating lineup today that feels incredibly cohesive.
We really do. We are going to be talking about a massive shift toward digital sovereignty, with two separate stories about developers fleeing American cloud infrastructure and GitHub. We also have a fun, old-school internet hack for getting free local domain names, a heated debate about payment processors forcing Kickstarter to ban adult content, and finally, some mind-blowing engineering updates on SpaceX's Starship V3.
Let us jump right into that first theme, because it dominated the front page yesterday. The top story with over 900 points was a blog post by a developer who goes by Monokai, titled How I Moved My Digital Stack to Europe. And this was not just a weekend project to save a few bucks. This was a philosophical and highly practical migration away from US tech giants.
Right. The author talks about this growing discomfort with having their entire digital infrastructure sitting on servers they do not control, in a jurisdiction that is increasingly unpredictable. So they literally audited their entire stack and swapped everything for European alternatives.
And the swaps are really interesting for anyone who builds software. They moved from Google Analytics to self-hosted Matomo to avoid the GDPR cookie consent theater. They dropped Google Workspace for ProtonMail, which is based in Switzerland. They even moved their compute and object storage from DigitalOcean and AWS over to Scaleway, a French cloud provider.
I loved the detail about Scaleway showing projected CO2 emissions alongside server locations. The author ended up hosting most of their infrastructure in Paris specifically because the compute there consumes the least energy. They also swapped SendGrid for a European service called Letterment and moved from OpenAI to Mistral for their AI API integrations.
What really struck me was the discussion in the Hacker News comments. A user named TrackerFF mentioned they were at a tech conference for European government officials, and the very first question asked to every single startup was, "Can we fully host this from within the EU?"
Yes, the sentiment has shifted incredibly fast over the last year, and the comments really dug into why. It is not just about where the physical servers are located. It is about the U.S. Cloud Act.
Exactly. The Cloud Act allows U.S. federal law enforcement to compel American tech companies to hand over data, regardless of whether those servers are physically sitting in Frankfurt or Paris. So having an AWS region in Europe does not actually protect European companies from U.S. jurisdiction if the parent company is American.
And that leads perfectly into our second story, which had over 500 points. It is a post by Joreen Schreivershoff called Leaving GitHub for 4JO. And Mike, this is the exact same digital sovereignty argument, but applied to where we host our code.
It really is. Joreen moved his canonical Git host to a self-hosted 4JO instance on a single Intel NUC, but his reasoning is what caught everyone's attention. He specifically points out that he is not leaving because of GitHub's recent reliability issues, though there were apparently 48 major outages in the last year alone. He is leaving because of AI and corporate control.
The timeline he lays out is pretty stark. In August 2025, GitHub essentially stopped having its own independent CEO and was absorbed into Microsoft's core AI division. And then, just last month, in April 2026, GitHub flipped the default settings so that Copilot user interaction data is opted in for AI training by default.
And the kicker is that there is no repository-level opt-out. If you maintain an open source project on GitHub, you cannot stop contributors who use Copilot from having their interactions with your code used as training data for Microsoft's models.
Joreen also points out that the Dutch government just made the exact same calculation. They recently launched code.overheid.nl, a self-hosted 4JO instance for Dutch government source code, specifically to maintain digital autonomy.
The Hacker News comments on this one were a classic mix of nostalgia and legal debate. Some people pointed out that we have all forgotten the original spirit of Git. It was designed by Linus Torvalds to be completely decentralized. GitHub was just a convenient centralized wrapper that we all got addicted to.
But the legal debate in the comments was fascinating. People were arguing about whether training AI on open source code is a copyright violation. And a lot of commenters pointed out that under current legal precedents, knowledge distillation and model training are largely considered fair use. So moving your code off GitHub does not legally stop AI companies from scraping it. It just stops Microsoft from having privileged real-time access to the interaction data as people write the code.
It is a subtle but important distinction. All right, let us take a breath and look at something a bit more nostalgic. Our third story is a guide from Frederick's Perch about setting up a free .city.state.us locality domain. This one got over 500 points and brought back a lot of memories for the older internet crowd.
This was such a fun read. I didn't even know these existed. Apparently, back in 1992, the US government set up a system for locality domains, so you could have an address like frederick.seattle.wa.us, and the infrastructure is still maintained under government contract today, and you can get them for free.
The catch is that the registration process is incredibly manual and bureaucratic. You have to find the specific company that was delegated the rights to your local area back in the 90s or 2000s. Some of these companies have changed names or barely exist anymore.
Right, and you can't just register it like a normal domain. You have to already have name servers set up before you apply. The author figured out that you can use Amazon LightSail to get free name servers, and then you basically email a text-based form called the interim.us domain template version 2 to some random local ISP and hope they still check their email.
The comment section was a beautiful tribute to the early internet. People were bringing up John Postel, the legendary computer scientist who helped design the domain name system. He originally envisioned these geographical domains as a non-commercial public service.
One commenter had a great story about tracking down the widow of a guy who ran the locality register for their town in Oregon, just trying to keep the domain alive because she was about to turn off the hosting. Another person tried to get a Boston locality domain, but the current registrar demanded a notarized letter from the Boston city government on official letterhead, which is just impossible to get for a personal blog.
It really highlights how much the internet has changed. We went from this academic, trust-based system to the massive, highly monetized ICANN domain industry we have today. Speaking of monetization and control, our fourth story is a bit controversial. Kickstarter is reportedly being forced to ban adult content by its payment processors.
This story came from Kotaku and got around 360 points. Kickstarter recently updated its mature content guidelines to ban things like implied sex acts, photorealistic sexual content, and even implied nudity. An email sent to creators suggests that Stripe, their payment processor, is the one forcing this review.
This is not a new phenomenon. We saw Steam and itch.io go through the exact same thing in 2025, under pressure from Visa and MasterCard. But the Hacker News discussion really dug into the why behind this.
Yeah, the immediate reaction from a lot of people is that this is some sort of religious or moral policing by the financial industry. But the people in the comments who actually work in the payment space strongly pushed back on that narrative.
Exactly. It almost always comes down to economics. Adult content historically has massive rates of fraud and chargebacks. People buy the content, regret it, or do not want their spouse to see the credit card bill, so they call their bank and claim the card was stolen.
And when chargeback rates get too high, the payment processor gets fined by the credit card networks. So companies like Stripe classify adult content as high risk. They either drop the merchants entirely, or they require massive reserve funds that a platform like Kickstarter just does not want to deal with.
There was a really interesting side debate in the comments about American banking infrastructure. A user pointed out that if US credit card issuers were actually worried about fraud, they would have implemented the PIN part of chip and PIN decades ago, like the rest of the world did. In the US, you can still just steal a physical card and use it until the fraud algorithms catch on, because we rarely require a PIN or a text message code for online purchases.
That is such a good point. It turns a moral free speech debate into a purely technical infrastructure problem. If payments were irreversible, or at least hard to fake, this whole censorship issue might disappear.
All right, let us wrap up today with some rocket science. Our final story is an update direct from SpaceX about Starship V3, which got over 300 points.
This is the first major upgrade to the Starship family, and the engineering details are just staggering. They have completely redesigned the Raptor engines. They moved a ton of the sensors and auxiliary systems inside the engine housing itself.
One of the commenters mentioned that Tory Bruno, the CEO of United Launch Alliance, which is the Boeing and Lockheed Martin joint venture, literally did not believe the pictures of the new engines when he first saw them.
That is amazing. Why didn't he believe it?
Because in traditional aerospace, Conway's Law is very real. The final engine usually looks like the organizational chart of the company that built it. You can see the separate components bolted on by different isolated teams. SpaceX managed to integrate everything so tightly into this sleek, simple-looking package that traditional aerospace engineers thought it was fake.
They also improved the thrust-to-weight ratio, and they are adding about 44 tons of Starlink simulators to this next flight, basically dumb payloads to test the deployment mechanisms. They are even putting cameras on these simulators to fly alongside Starship and inspect the heat shield while it is in orbit.
The comments naturally drifted into the broader goal of all this, which is settling Mars, and that sparked a massive debate about the biological realities of space colonization.
Right. Someone brought up the book A City on Mars, which makes a pretty compelling case that a permanent settlement is incredibly unlikely to work anytime soon.
The biological constraints are terrifying. One commenter talked about closed ecological systems and the problems they have right now on the International Space Station. Without an active Earth-like ecosystem to break down waste, you get these crazy, durable biofilm ecosystems growing on the walls, fungi actively degrading polymer materials, and bacteria showing increased virulence in microgravity.
It is a harsh reality check. We can build the most beautiful, integrated rocket engines in the world, but keeping human biology happy in a closed metal tube for years is a completely different level of hard.
It really is. And that does it for today's episode. From fleeing American cloud servers to building better rockets, it was a heavy engineering day on Hacker News.
Thanks for tuning in to HN Pod. Be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and we will be back tomorrow to bring you the best of Hacker News. Have a great day, everyone.